You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 30th of September. Can Mike Conley do what Goran Dragic did this season? Plus an NBA Finals preview. Our team look today is the Chicago Bulls. And our player look today is Marcus Morris, the Morris that ended the year on the Clippers. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. Thank you to all of you who join us every day for this. Thank you for those who listen three times a week. That's all we ask. I want five times a week. Actually, this week I only want four because I'm not doing a Friday show. Tomorrow's show's really interesting. We look at free agent Paul Millsap, and we look at Kevin Love, and we take our first look at a draft prospect in Jalen Smith. So make sure you grab tomorrow's show. I will not have an NBA preview, quite honestly, because of the fact that I am going to run over to Moab for a day or two with my 18-year-old son, who's leaving the house shortly for a... and so I suddenly am desperate to spend time with him, so we're going to sneak away for a day or two. All right, I want to open this up by looking at Goran Dragic and what he did this year and Mike Conley and where he is in his career. Now, Dragic, quite frankly, looks to me at this same stage to be way more worn out than Mike Conley is. But at 32 years old, the 18-19 season for Goran Dragic, he then the next season with the Miami Heat this year started coming off the bench. So here you got Dragic, who's not a $30 million player, and these things actually matter in a lot of ways, but he is an $18 million a year player. It's not like he's coming cheap. Neither of them have been all-stars. Both of them have been crazy high-level players. Conley's career is probably... Actually, that's not true. Goran Dragic has been an all-star in 13-14. I would probably say Conley's career should seem to be a little bit more prestigious. But interestingly enough, Goran Dragic has started every game he played until the 18-19 season when injuries suddenly had him coming off the bench. And truthfully, he broke down to a point where he only played 36 games in 18-19. So not a great... And his numbers really fell off the map. He went from 48 to 45% and dropped to 41. And then this year, Miami said to him, okay, we still love you. You're still great. You're still going to play 28 minutes a night. You're still important, but you're going to come off the bench. You're going to play a lot of these minutes against second-tier guys. And he had a kind of resurgence. He averaged 44% shooting, right? A little bit below his season average. His three-point shooting was right on. His two-point overall percentage was on. His effective field goal percentage was better. He still averaged 16 points a game. It wasn't like they diminished his role. And then in the playoffs, when time came, playoffs are a different game, they actually put him back in the starting lineup. And Dragic has averaged 21 points, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists a game, and he's been masterful. If you look at Mike Conley's 19-20 season to Goran Dragic's 18-19 season, they're the same age. Their numbers are pretty similar. Both of them shot 41% from the field. Mike's a better three-point shooter, so he hit 38% to Dragic's 35%. But Dragic's two-point percentage was better. Their effective field goal percentage was both of them were below average by that point. They averaged the same amount of rebounds, the same amount of assists, the same exact amount of steals, the same exact amount of blocks, the same exact amount of turnovers, the same amount of fouls. And Conley averaged 14.4 points and Goran Dragic averaged 13.7. Like just on the pure numbers of it, they look really similar. If we go per 36 minutes, one averaged 17.8 points, the other averaged 17.9. Their turnovers between 2.4 and 2.6. Their blocks were the same. Their steals were the same. Dragic averaged a few more assists. Their rebounds were the exact same. Mike's a better free throw shooter, but they went to the line the exact same amount of times. Their three-point shooting, Mike got off 7 per 36 minutes. Dragic got off 6. Mike's shooting's a little better at 38 compared to 35. I think there's some aspects where Mike might be a little bit of a better player. Dragic is a little bigger, and which might help him age a little bit. At 6'3", 190, he's bigger. But there's a lot of comparisons here between where Goran Dragic was after the 18-19 season and where Mike Conley is after this season. And this year, Miami took Goran Dragic at 33 years old and had him come off the bench. And then when it was playoff time, he moved back in the starting lineup and was brilliant. Can the Jazz do the same thing with Mike Conley in this upcoming year? That you have Donovan Mitchell as your starting point guard. You play Royce O'Neal or Joe Ingles next to him, and Mike Conley comes off the bench. Mike Conley probably finishes most games. Mike Conley ends up playing really the same amount of minutes, but he does it against a lot of second-tier guys. And frankly, I think if you dig into Mike Conley's numbers this year, which is this is hard to do. I don't have the mechanism by which to figure this out. The way I was trying to look at it a little bit today was like, what were Mike Conley's second quarter numbers? But I'm not sure that's a great indicator. But Mike Conley did play a decent amount of bench minutes this year. I think I felt like with success. And at some point in your career, this is where you go. Now, Mike had health issues, but so did Goran Dragic. Like, they both had leg issues at this 32 years of age issue. So I kind of like this. Obviously Mike has to be willing to be at that stage of his career where he decides that this is okay and that he's going to buy into it. And he's going to be interested in having, you know, making that kind of change. But the comparison and the similarity in their games is certainly there. Certainly there. So chew on it. All right, NBA Finals. I think it's going to be a really interesting series. I was surprised ESPN, 67% picked the Lakers, 33% picked the Heat. That's probably about right. But it shows me that people are looking at the Heat. I mean, okay, the Lakers are going to win this series because LeBron James and Anthony Davis are better than any other two players on the floor, and that's really what a lot of this comes down to, right? Like, that's what it gets down to. When you start to look at the specific matchups, you can find a lot of areas where Miami causes some pressure points on the Lakers. The first thing I think you've really got to do is not think of Miami as you did all season long. Like, I can pull up a bunch of numbers about how Miami plays and things like that, but Eric Spoelstra changed this team in the offseason, in the three-month sabbatical break, COVID, whatever, and changed who they are as a team. And I think that's, you know, that's probably an aspect that's worth looking at. You know, Miami just all is a different, hey, they were good. They were the 8th best offense, 9th best defense. The Lakers were the 11th best offense and the 3rd best defense. So in the regular season, even beforehand, Miami's a better offensive team than the Lakers. Now, that's a wild thought. The Lakers defense is just fabulous. And I think will over their length, it's actually a little bit of the Lakers' length against Miami's speed. So let me try to be a little bit more focused than I was right there. So Miami's the best defense that the Lakers will play in the playoffs. The Lakers in the playoffs, despite how much I've talked about, have actually been a pretty good half-court offensive team. It feels to me as though that's not entirely sustainable, that somebody could make them become a less good half-court offensive team. And I wonder whether Miami can do that. The zone that Miami plays is something the Lakers have to prepare for, but over the course of a series is something you get used to. Boston riddled it pretty good by the end. Boston had it figured out. Now Lakers have that film. You know, Miami's doing something unique there, but it's something that not everybody in the league does it for a reason. So I think they'll play the zone. I think it'll impact things. If they can force the Lakers into a jump shooting team, then that gets really interesting. The Lakers' reason their half-court offense has been good is because, frankly, They've been a good half-court jump shooting team in the playoffs, stunningly. And if they continue to do that, then they win the title because they have the two best players and their fringe players are doing what they're supposed to do. But in the playoffs so far, Rondo's 13 of 29 from three and Markieff Morris is 17 of 39 from three. Like those two guys, Rajon at 45%, Markieff Morris at 44%, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at 42%, like lights out. Danny Green at 36%. Forget about it. Like, if those four guys all shoot over 36% in this series, then it's over. LeBron's not making jump shots. Kyle Kuzma's not a good shooter. And Alex Caruso's not a very good shooter either at 24%. So, but I'm not totally comfortable believing that Rajon Rondo and Markieff Morris are going to be able to keep that up. I do actually feel pretty good that Kentavious Caldwell-Pope can. And that Danny Green will shoot his 36%. But if Rondo and Morris start to miss, then that zone can start to have an impact in Miami's defense. That's a pressure point. The other pressure point that I think Miami can impact LA on is the great LeBron James Anthony Davis pick and roll. And it's great. And it's really hard to guard. But the Miami should be able to switch all of that every time. And then Bam ends up on LeBron. And whoever, whether it's Jimmy Butler guarding LeBron, then Jimmy Butler ends up on Anthony Davis. And I don't think that's a problem. So those are the two areas where, you know, I look at this series, and to me, there's some aspects that look as though, you know, it could get interesting. Now, when the big men are on the floor, they'll run a lot of pick and roll that way. I also can't believe that Miami's not going to be able to handle the Rajon Rondo pick and roll the way Denver couldn't handle it. I just don't believe that. So those are some pressure points where I think Miami causes the Lakers some problems. The other aspect of this is that the Lakers are really good, and the Lakers are crazy long defensively. I mean, from the very first time we played the Lakers, our coaching staff just would talk to me about, oh my gosh, they're long. It's crazy long. It's longer than anyone else in the league. It seems like a weird thing to talk about, but it's true. It's an incredibly impactful. It gets them out in transition, and it's how they win games. And I think Miami will have a hard time scoring. There's a chance this could get ugly offensively. The final one for the Lakers that in the playoffs I think they'll do well is that whether it's LeBron or Howard or Davis or really it's Howard, Davis, maybe McGee, they've got to jump out on Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson coming off picks on shooters and be willing to leave Bam to deny that shot. And when you get so in love with worrying about dealing with Bam all the time, that you don't come out to that shots where Hero and Robinson kill you. In the regular season game, I can totally see where Howard wouldn't be focused on that, where Davis wouldn't be focused on that. In the playoffs, I suspect they will. Two coaches that know each other very well also. Which is kind of an interesting aspect to this. Today, we will look at Marcus Morris and the Chicago Bulls as we continue. Today's show brought to you by The Store, 6200 South and 20th East. That is The Store. Stop by, visit. If you walk on in and you go to the right side, you can get the great mudslide cookies. If you go to the back area, you'll see all the wonderful food that they have prepared. The brisket they get out of the group out of Logan. Incredible. Great meat selection. Then they have the pre-made meals for you. I had actually a hub and spoke pulled pork sandwich the other day that was just great, where they've made deals with local. This is the essence of the store. Local places to help them stay in business, get things done, and had some pre-made meals there. For them. And so I had a pulled pork sandwich from Hub and Spoke. It was great. Downtown Wednesdays is sushi day. $5 rolls made that morning for you in the sushi, grab them back in the compartment. That's the downtown right across from the Children's Museum. Make sure you check it out. Today's show is also, that's The Store, 600 South 20th East, as well as down at the Gateway. Today's show is also brought to you by Homie. Homie is revolutionizing the real estate market and changing the way people view real estate and what's going on about it. The easiest thing for you to do is just to text LOCK to 88588 to find out. But if you're taking advantage of this robust market right now and you are going to go into real sell your house or buy a home, take a minute and go to Homie.com/millennials. What Homie did is they put together an independent study to let people know more about real estate buying. And what they found out was a lot of people don't know. In fact, 65% of the respondents didn't know that when you sell a home, 6% of the price, or if you think about that, $18,000 on a $300,000 home goes to realtors. Well, that's not the way Homie does it. Homie does it instead. So the set fee on when you're selling your house and then buying the house, they try to get you $5,000 back. Homie has listed homes have sold for 1.2% higher than comparable homes listed with traditional brokers. And Homie listed homes have sold 8 days faster than with traditional brokers. So find out more about Homie by texting LOCK to the good old 88588. That's whatever favorite wide receiver that wore 88, George Brett, and then that wide receiver again. Or some other number, 5, Rodney Hood. That's text LOCK to 88588. An experienced local Homie agent will help you every step of the way. Remember, you can buy with Homie and save thousands. Homie's got your back. Let's look at Marcus Morris. Morris is currently on the Clippers. They have some tax issues. He's a free agent. Going to B-Ball Index, thanks to the people at B-Ball Index. For these, you can check it out yourself. Pretty great site. All right, he's a wing player. We're just going to compare him to all. Actually, we'll compare him to wing players. That'll get him. He's not a big. He's not a guard. So there's 212. We're going to match him with a. It looks to be matched to about 57 different wing players right now. We'll see how he grades out in that group. I'm going to drop, actually, I had his minutes up at 1,000. I'm going to drop that minute, the minute gap. I'm going to drop down to about 350 just to widen out our grouping a little bit. That gets us to 107 wing players. 350 is pretty low, but in this weird season, we'll take it to 500. See, we just fiddle around a little bit. All right, so now we've got him compared to 94 wing players. He gets a top talents are a perimeter shooter, good roll gravity, good defensive rebounding and ability to shoot one-on-one. The badges that B-Ball Index gives him are contact finisher, difficult shots, and dead eye for silver, and a good transition player in bronze. Morris is 30.8 years old. He's 6'8", 218. Okay, so now suddenly you add him to our roster. He starts, and you have he and Bojan Bogdanović, whoever you play at the two, with Donovan, Mike Conley coming off the bench as Goran Dragic, and Joe Ingles coming off the bench with Mike Conley. And that's a pretty, you get pretty deep. Like, that's interesting. So I don't know if that's how we do things, but it's an idea. This is the where you add a 4 and then we get bigger to the lineup. So let's see if he's, you know, the other question though is at this point, Marcus Morris, any good? His total usage rate when he's on the floor, he has a 21% usage rate, which is in the 75th percentile. So you're giving up possessions. He's going to have possessions. His lineup data that he played with, C minus talent, C offense, C minus defense, C plus playmaking and bad spacing. We are the opposite. We are great spacing. So he played with really bad spacing teams, particularly with the Clippers. Interesting little note on him. His defensive role versatility, which is the estimate of a player's defensive versatility based on the profile of offensive roles that he spent time guarding in possession data. So this is kind of, he gets an A. So he gets a really high rating for being able to guard different types of players. At 6'8", 218, he's pretty switchable. His perimeter shooting, he gets an A-. Pull-up shooting off the bounce, he gets a B. Catch-and-shoot three-point shooting, he gets an A. Above-the-break three-point shooting, he gets an A. Corner three-point shooting, he gets a B. Wow. Hit 41% of his threes this last year. Marcus Morris. Openness rating, he got an F. In other words, he's not getting open looks, and he's making them. Okay? Pretty interesting. Three-point shot quality, got an F. Total three-point gravity, A-. Foul rate on 3 points, an A. Perimeter shooting overall, an A. For the 94 wing players that played at least 500 minutes. That's pretty interesting. How is he in isolation? Marcus Morris judges out as an A-minus in total isolation. His impact's not great. His foul drawing's not great. His turnover rate is high. How about as a driver? We're the number one drive team in the NBA. Drives for 75 possessions. He gets an A. Total shots at the rim, he gets an F. Okay, that might be aging. Unassisted rim shots, not very good. Drive out passing rate, drive out assist rate, he gets an F. So we got another non-passer. Foul rate, drawing fouls, he gets an A. Adjusted field goal percentage at the rim, an F. Overall finishing talent, a D minus. Okay. So at 30 years old, I'll have to check when he turns 31. He and Markieff will do it on the same day as they are twins. And Marcus Morris, by the way, has had some off-court issues. You'd have to kind of decide. He turned September 2nd, he turned 31 years old. So he just turned 31 years of age. You know, his three-point shooting, interestingly, for the Clippers was not good. His 41% was mostly with the Knicks. That was the highest of his career. He was at 37% before that. He's averaged double digits for 6 or 7 straight years. I'm assuming you're listening right now pretty intrigued of Marcus Morris. So we discussed his finishing's not great. His off-ball movement, he gets poor grades. Off-screen possessions, he's actually pretty good, which is good because we play a lot of screen game, but his shooting off of him's not good. Playmaking, his assist, the total points from assists per 75 offensive possessions, he gets an F. His role-adjusted assists per 75 possessions, which is performance relative to expectation based on others in the same role, he gets a dog droppings for a zero percentile, like the lowest in the league. His passing creation volume is an F. His passing versatility is that dog thing again, and his passing efficiency is an F. Okay, so he's not a passer. He's a good shooter. He's pretty good in isolation. He's not a playmaker. He'd have to change how he's moved. Here's the biggest surprise to me. He's a D-plus rebounder offensively and a D-plus rebounder defensively. I didn't realize that. I thought he was a better rebounder than that. He gets bad grades rebounding. Perimeter defense, turnover rate, this is how they judge it. The first one they look at is his turnover rate. He forces D minus. They look at estimated percentages of loose ball player recovers. He gets a C minus. Estimate of how active a defender he is on balls with steals. He gets a D. Estimate of how active he is in passing lanes, which is deflections, D plus. Three-point contest for 75%, he gets an F. Steals 75 possessions, he gets a D. Deflections, D+. He gets an A for shot profile distribution, which is good. Hunted in perimeter isolation. Rate per 100 possessions. Defending a player was attacked in isolation after a pick-and-roll switch over under the average rate for their defensive role. He gets an F. In other words, do the teams hunt him in isolation? He was in the 12th percentile. Seems like a lot. Okay. He guards the small forward 32% of the time and the power forward 28% of the time, but he guarded the shooting guard 19% and the point guard 12%. So that's interesting. That's where he gets that versatility we talked about. He actually gets decent grades on his interior defense, and the Knicks and the Clippers kind of moved him around. He guarded a Tier 1 usage player at league average, a Tier 2 at league average. He spent most of his time guarding Tier 3 and Tier 4. So he's not going to be a defensive stopper. He's not a particularly good rebounder, it shows. He's not a passer. He's an offensive shooter. He's got size. He creates. The lack of rebounding is disappointing for what we need out of a player. All right, we'll look at his player impact ratings, and we'll look at I did this in the wrong order today. I was excited to do Marcus Morris. Tomorrow we're going to look at Paul Millsap. It'll be interesting to get your thoughts on what you think of Paul Millsap compared to Marcus Morris and the two. And we'll come back and we'll look at the Chicago Bulls and give you Marcus Morris's player impact ratings as well. So when I head to Moab, you know what I'm taking. Built Bar. That's absolutely right. I'm taking the brand new Built Bars. They're out. They're fabulous. They're the most deliciousest ever. That's actually a word they put in their ad copy, and we're all laughing about it because we don't actually think it's a word, but we're all going to go with it. I was listening to one of our Locked On podcasts the other day, and the guy was raving about the coconut almond Built Bar. If you like Mounds or Almond Joys, he said the peanut butter brownie is amazing. I could not tell you about that because I am allergic to nuts, but he was talking about both those. His wife loved the peanut butter brownie. I personally think the 100% chocolate on the mint brownie is great. I'm going to have to really hunt out the coconut because if it tastes like the other's an Almond Joy, that must taste like a Mounds. That'd be great. The caramel brownie new bar I really, really like. And they've got cookies and cream and pumpkin chocolate chip right now. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. You'll get $10 off your next order. Doesn't have to be your first. Built Bar is amazing. 120 calories less than the leading men's bar. 3.5 fat grams less, 17 sugar grams, fewer sugar grams. Carbs, 4 grams of carbs compared to the leading men's bars, 38. And protein, 7 grams more. Check it out. It's Built Bar. They taste like a candy bar, but they're good for you. They've got 100% chocolate on the outside. They're unbelievably healthy and ridiculously delicious. Go to BuiltBar.com and get your promo code locked on to get $10 off. What I probably cannot get at Dead Horse Park is DoorDash, which is a bummer. Because when you're craving food, DoorDash is the answer. They bring it right to your door. Ordering is easy. You open the DoorDash app. You choose what you want to eat. Your food will be left safely outside your door with a new contact delivery drop-off setting. And they partner with just about everyone. You can get your favorite national restaurants when you're having that craving for that burrito. Or you can help out the local restaurants that are all open for delivery and there for you with DoorDash. Select your favorite local restaurant and your food will be left right at your door. And right now, our listeners get $5 off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app. Enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. That's $5 off, zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app and enter the code LOCKEDONNBA. Don't forget, that's LOCKEDONNBA and $5 off your first order with DoorDash. All right, let's wrap up Marcus Morris. Player impact ratings by Jacob Goldstein. He gets a C+, a B offense, D+, defense. Kind of what we expected. Real plus minus, he gets a C+ with a, this is interesting, a D+ offense and a B- defense. Did not expect that. Raptor gives, he's all over the map. Raptor gives him a B+ with an A- offense and a C defense. And Box plus minus gives him a B- with a B+ offense and a D- defense. Kind of crazy how he's all over the map. Overall, his effective field goal percentage was a C-. His true shooting percentage was a C+. His points per shot were a C. I think this is interesting. His points per possession in transition was an A-. And I did not know this about him. This actually is kind of the little piece of the puzzle that got me interested. I don't know how often. But as a pick-and-roll ball handler, he had an A- grade. I do not think of Marcus Morris as someone who can handle. I'll have to take some time and look into that. That's why I love stats and data, because frankly, that just makes me look at him a little bit differently than I would have otherwise. And I didn't know, I think Marcus Morris is a catch and shoot, one-on-one, not surprised he doesn't pass, didn't realize it was as bad as it said there. I thought of him as a pretty good rebounder. But in his time with the Clippers, 16% of his actions were as a pick and roll ball handler. And he did okay. Not great. But that's what we do. We play a lot of pick and roll. I never thought of him as a pick and roll guy. So that opens my eyes a little bit more to him as a possibility of someone who might fit. I'm intrigued. I'll admit, I'm far more intrigued after running this. And when he was with the Knicks, by the way, he got almost all of his offense as a pick and roll ball handler and was excellent at it. He had 160 possessions as the pick and roll ball handler for the Knicks. So I'm pretty intrigued by Marcus Morris. Got to do the background check, make sure we know what's going on, and make sure he's an all right guy. All right, let's look at the Chicago Bulls for a second. Bulls are pretty interesting. They've got a new coach in Billy Donovan. And they've got some players on that roster. It'd be interesting to see what they do. They have $111 million active contract. They're over the cap. They're not at the luxury tax, but they have a bunch of big decisions coming. So first thing is Chris Dunn is a restricted free agent who's probably the best on-ball defender in the NBA. Really not a good shooter, but could be a Marcus Smart type. Be pretty interesting to put next to Donovan, frankly. He's a restricted free agent. You'd have to use all of your mid-level exception. I think they'd match it. To get him to not match it. Hard to get. Though they have Kobe White, who's probably their future point guard, and they have Zach LaVine, and they've paid Tamas Satoransky $10 million. You might, and they've played Ryan Arcidiacono $3 million. You might be able to push them a little bit and get them to pass on Chris Dunn. He really can't shoot. He's really awesome defensively. We'll dig into him at some point coming up here. They've got an interesting player in Otto Porter. Player option for $28 million. Okay, for those of you on the Mike Conley trade bandwagon, Otto Porter, $28 million. 1 year left on his deal. Mike Conley, $28 million. Now, do the Bulls have a reason why they need a pure point guard to play with Zach LaVine and Kobe White? And that's their, probably not, but get, you know, and they don't really get out from under money. They just change it. So I'm not sure why they would do that. But there's Otto Porter sitting at $28.5 million, unrestricted free agent in a year. Had a very disappointing run there. We'll see. Zach LaVine is at $19.5 and $19.5 each of the next 2 years. If for some reason they want off Zach LaVine, I would completely roll the dice on that gamble. He comes out on my metrics with just fabulous numbers all of the time. Thaddeus Young, they've signed for two more years at 13 and 14. I don't know why. Felicio, they've got at $7 million. Lauri Markkanen at $6.7 million, and they've got to make him an offer here. He's a restricted free agent next year. They're into the extension conversations with Markkanen, and he's been up and down. Wendell Carter, they have for the future, and they have another kid named Daniel Gafford. Right now, if you look at their future, it's Kobe White with Zach LaVine, with Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter. Is that what they want for their future? This is where they're so interesting. Are those the four pieces that Billy Donovan's going to want? Are they going to give Billy Donovan some time? And then they've just paid a lot of money for middle pieces. Like, I like Ryan Arcidiacono. He's got $3 million in a club option, $3 million next year. I don't think they'd get off it, but they overpaid for that. I like him, though. Tamas Satoransky, I like also, but they paid $10 million for each of the next 2 years for Tamas Satoransky. Okay, maybe. I mean, like, he kind of was the, you know, that's probably their four guards. They're Satoransky, LaVine, Kobe White, and Arcidiacono. Maybe they are. Maybe you can go get Chris Dunn at a decent number. That'd be a fifth guard. They're small forwards. They have Chandler Hutchinson, who I don't know how they feel about, and Otto Porter. Might play Thaddeus Young as your small forward in that setting, and then you have Lauri Markkanen and Wendell Carter as your centers. It's a super young team. I don't think it really gels very well together, but it's awfully hard to tell. It was such a bizarre situation for the last few years. But they're a team where I don't know how you go get Zach LaVine, but to me, Zach LaVine is just needs some coaching. He's just an unbelievable world-class athlete. He's got a bunch of metrics that bounce off the charts for me on how good he is. He has a reputation as this kind of crazy gunner and this and that. I don't buy it. He's an elite, elite level athlete, and he can really score it. I'm a fan. I'm a fan in the sense a lot of people, like, I'm a fan. Let me just say it. I'm a fan. He peaks out on rim finishing numbers. He peaks out on off the bounce 3-point shooting. He peaks out on, I haven't done this in a, I mean, he's a player who every time I run numbers, Zach LaVine keeps showing up. And frankly, he's 25 and 6'6 and 200 pounds. Like, I want that. So off the bounce 3-point shooting was 36% last year. His catch and shoot was 41%. I'll take it. His isolation game is good. He's played with terrible players. He's an elite level finisher. I'd give up an awful lot to go get Zach LaVine. I'd give up a surprising amount to get Zach LaVine. I really like him. And I think in the right system with the right coaches, he could be really good. Terrible rebounder. Terrible. You know, a lot of, but he's been in a terrible, he and Jim Boylan just did not hit at all. Defensively, he actually has guarded top tier guys more than most. I'm a fan. I mean, his defensive ratings are disastrous. So you've got to figure out if you're going to go roll the dice on Zach LaVine, whether you think you can actually get him to defend. He might rate out as the worst defensive player in all of the NBA. Is that because he hated his head coach or because he's a jerk? I mean, jerk's probably the wrong word, but like to be that bad defensively, you're just that selfish. So what is it? His contract numbers are not bad. I'll take $20 million on him each of the next few years. I don't think he's available, but maybe. Maybe the new GM there decides they're moving on. I mean, everything's new in Chicago. Maybe they don't have an interest in a non-shooting guard like Chris Dunn. You can go get him to go play the Torrey Craig defensive role so Donovan doesn't have to. If Donovan's going to be your point guard, who's guarding guys? Have Chris Dunn do it. Have him play a non-shooting shooting guard. Tough. You got two non-shooters now with Chris Dunn and Rudy Gobert on the floor. That's hard. Might not work. It's all very complicated. All right. That's an interesting team to keep an eye on, Chicago, and what they do with roster moves. And I just put a stake in the ground for Zach LaVine. That's a stunning move. All right. Tomorrow, Paul Millsap's our free agent look. Do you like him more than Marcus Morris by the time we're done with this? And we'll look at our first draft prospect, Jalen Smith out of Maryland. And we'll talk Kevin Love. Have a good one. Talk to you soon. Thanks very much for tuning in. This is Locked On Jazz. Enjoy the NBA Finals tonight. Locked On NBA today. Got a good one. John Corrales licking his wounds with the Celtics and Jake Madison of the Pelicans licking his wounds of Anthony Davis being in the finals. Two sour guys probably doing that. Plus, make sure you grab our new lineup of Locked On NFL and Peacock and Williamson if you're a football fan. Have a great one. See you.